crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigall. Thanks very much for joining us today. We're coming to you today, as per usual, from Jerusalem, Israel. Today I want to talk about another Davidic city that has been unearthed. Up to this point, we know of two, basically, Jerusalem and Kirbet Kayafa. But reports over the past couple of months have been talking about a third that has been discovered to Israel's south. We're going to cover that in a little bit. Before I get to that, though, I want to talk about the exhibit that we are going to be hosting. You might have heard about this. This is the exhibit that is going to feature the seal impressions of King Hezekiah and Isaiah the prophet. And this is the first time that both of these discoveries will be exhibited together. And that exhibition is going to take place back on the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College in Edmond, Oklahoma. College has a very close relationship and partnership with Dr. Ilot Mazar of Hebrew University. This is a relationship that started 50 years ago this year, and in fact, the exhibition is going to be celebrating that fact as well. And so we are going to have about 40 different artifacts, all of those relating to the period of Hezekiah and Isaiah, this period right at the end of the 8th century when the Assyrian Empire is barreling down through Judea, already taking into captivity the Israelites to the north, and King Sennacherib comes knocking on Jerusalem's door after taking over 40 of the fenced cities of Judah. And then, for some reason, as we covered last program, he was unable to conquer Jerusalem. And as we brought out last time, this was a total reversal departure from his usual policy of bringing rebellious leaders to heel. That's what he wanted to do to Hezekiah, but he could not do it. King Sennacherib couldn't do it. Why not? Well, we're going to discuss that in this exhibit, and we're going to bring together artifacts from Assyria, from ancient Judah, put them together side by side with the Bible. If you have any doubt about the biblical veracity or the history in the Bible and you want to put it up against a known historical event, this is the time period in which you should study. This is what you should study. In no other period of history is there more evidence that supports the biblical narrative than this episode of Sennacherib trying to take Jerusalem. And it is going to be on display in Armstrong Auditorium in Edmond, Oklahoma. Even though there is going to be that exhibit there, we are also going to have a celebration here in Jerusalem at the King David at 6:30 p.m. It will begin on June 10th, and this is going to feature a keynote address by Dr. Ilot Mazar. Of course, these artifacts were discovered on her excavations in the Ophel in 2009. They were unearthed, and their significance was brought to light in 2015, and then earlier this year when for the Isaiah Bulla. She is going to give a 25-minute presentation about the artifacts, about the excavations on the Ophel, what we've accomplished so far, and also about this really special partnership that, as I said, goes back 50 years. And if you want to attend this event, you can do so. Please email. You can email the program if you like, sending your emails to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Again, it's in the King David there on King David Street here in central Jerusalem. We'll hopefully feature some artifacts there as well in the King David, and then also some of the storyboards and pictures of the artifacts that you'll have back in Edmond we will have there at the King David. And this event, of course, is going to be, or her keynote speech is going to be streamed live back to Oklahoma, where there will be the opening there. And then also other dignitaries that will be speaking from Oklahoma will be, again, beaming back that feed back to the King David. And so we will be linked together, Jerusalem and Edmond, Oklahoma, for the starting of this amazing exhibit. Again, it's a very exciting exhibit. We've gone to a lot of lengths to ensure that it is extremely captivating. You go to a museum these days, And they have so many artifacts on display that they don't really have time to slow down and tell the narrative, tell the story behind the artifacts, or put it together in a way where you have a single storyline flowing and then the artifacts just pop out of that story, showing how real it is. And with this story and the exhibit we are designing right now, we are trying to do that. We're trying to do that for you. Put all these discoveries in a timeline of this story that's laid out so perfectly in the Bible. We've even gone to Hezekiah's tunnel late last week or early last week with a three-dimensional scan captured part of Hezekiah's tunnel so that we can recreate that back in Edmond, Oklahoma, to give you a feel of how that tunnel was, the difficulty they would have faced in constructing that tunnel. And just to allow those people back in America to walk through that, I think will really make this history more impactful. But as we brought out last time, there certainly is a need for this exhibit. Yes, it is proving the Bible as being an accurate historical document. Yes, it does. But it also gives a lot of hope as well. This is a period in which you did have Judah full of sin, and it was rebelling in many ways until Hezekiah decided to put a stop to it. If you go back to Ahaz before Hezekiah, he was one of Judah's most wicked kings. Hezekiah gets in there in power when he's 25 years old and totally transforms the kingdom. And because of that, he decides that he's not going to pay tribute anymore to the Assyrians. And the Assyrians come down under Sennacherib and they try to take over the kingdom, and they do. Apart from Jerusalem. And you see Hezekiah lack faith in this situation and doesn't trust God. And he tries to pay off the Assyrians. The Assyrians just take that as a welcome sign to head on to Jerusalem, that payment. And at that point, there is a change. There's a change in Hezekiah. There's a change in the way that he deals with the situation. He looks to Isaiah, God's prophet at the time, and God's prophet encourages him and tells him what he should do. And then Jerusalem is saved. That's a hopeful message, definitely a hopeful message from the Bible. This didn't end in full destruction at this point. It would later, but not at this point. It did under Zedekiah, who wouldn't listen to God's prophet, Jeremiah. But that was 100 years after this took place with Hezekiah. Judah got to experience another 100 years in the land of Israel because of the reaction of Hezekiah and Isaiah. Now that is a hopeful message. And so please, if you're here in Jerusalem or elsewhere in Israel, again, email me, letters@watchjerusalem.co.il, express your interest. I can get your details and you could come to this Jerusalem celebration. We're also going to be at the same time as this celebration is taking place and the exhibit opens, we are going to be launching our new Watch Jerusalem website. It's going to have a more obvious focus on archaeology. It's going to have lots of videos, interactive maps as well. You're going to really enjoy that. So if you can't come to Jerusalem or if you're not in Oklahoma for this, then you can watch the event as well, streamed live on that or on our website, Watch Jerusalem, the new version that'll be coming out in about a month. So a lot of exciting things ahead. We're going to talk a little bit about Sennacherib on today's program, but just by way of introducing this Davidic city that has been uncovered. This Davidic city, Tel Eton, is in Israel's south, or Judah's south, ancient Judah's south, just close to Hebron. And it was given to the tribe of Judah. We believe it to be the biblical city of Eglon. We're not 100% sure on that, but it definitely looks to be that city. And so this town was given to Judah, and it was because it was Judah, and it was in fact the third largest tell behind Jerusalem and Lachish that has been uncovered in Judah. And so it's a very important city, and it was one that was destroyed by Sennacherib when he came down late in the 8th century. We can see the destruction layer of that inside Tel Eton, and this town has been excavated for numerous years. But this year we have a very surprising and interesting development. And that is the archaeologist there, or one of the archaeologists that leads this excavation, Professor Avraham Faust. He's a professor at Bar-Ilan University. And he tells us that in this city, we actually have evidence of King David. not finding King David's name, but we have evidence of the policy of King David, and you'll see what I mean as we go along. I'll just quote from an article from Breaking Israel News. They were quoting Professor Avram Fast. He said this, quote, "Until 25 years ago, no one doubted that King David was a historical figure. In the last 25 years or so, however, David's historicity and especially the size of his kingdom are hotly debated. The new discovery at Tel Eton, located in the Judean Shephelah to the east of the Hebron Hills, seems to suggest that the Highland Kingdom controlled larger areas than some scholars believe." So this is interesting, because what we've had for the past 20 years is, as you've heard on this program, just an attack on the biblical kings of David and Solomon. It seems once you get after that time, you get into the 8th century, 100 years after them, people generally believe that the Bible is pretty accurate, but not with David and Solomon. There just hasn't been that much evidence for David and Solomon. And so, are they even factual? Are they even historical figures? Now, in the past, since 1993, we have had the discovery of the Tel Dan Stele. That was discovered. That has the House of David written on that. I can put an article up for you on the website so that you can, or in the show notes for this program, so that you can read up about that. I don't want to focus on that at all, but I want to focus on these three cities: Jerusalem, Kirbet Kayafa, which was discovered early 2005 and excavated for about 7 or 8 seasons, which is clearly dated from David's time as well, which again kind of was a slap in the face, the biblical minimalist that said that David didn't, if he did exist, he just was a tribal chieftain on the hill of Jerusalem with a tiny little kingdom. But here you had Kirbet Kayafa, which is quite a ways away from Jerusalem, and a large Judean settlement taking place in that on that hilltop. And we've gone into before how people are trying to say that, oh, it's not Judean, it's not Jewish, it's Canaanite, or it's Philistine, or it's some other group, ethnic group we haven't even heard of, clutching at straws to try and just do away with the obvious, that it is Davidic, it's Jewish. It's Jewish, a Jewish city. Well, now we have a third city that the archaeologist there from Bar-Ilan University says indicates, or that this city, there's every indication that it was developed under King David's reign. And if we're talking King David, we're talking about the archaeological period known as Iron 2A, the very beginning of Iron 2A. And that is traditionally dated to around 1000 BC, or the time that David came into power. I just want to quote from Dr. Avram Faust here, or Professor Avram Faust. He said this, quote, "We, of course, did not find any artifacts that said King David or King Solomon, but we discovered at the site signs of a social transformation the region underwent, including the construction of a large edifice in a plan known to archaeologists as the, quote, four-room house, end quote, which is common in Israel but is rare to non-existent elsewhere. This seems to indicate that the inspiration or cause for the transformations are to be sought in the highland." And so what he's saying here is they have this large house. It follows the four-room house pattern, which is common only in Israel. And Israel, before this time, was located on the highlands here of Judea and Samaria, mainly, Jerusalem being the capital of this united kingdom of Israel. And because we have this four-room house here south of, or just next to Hebron, further south of Jerusalem, and we know that there's no four-room houses around Philistine territory or as further to the south or to the east, that it is connected with the highlands. The ethnic connection goes to where, to the highlands, to where the Jews were, to where the Israelites were. It wasn't another people that were occupying this tell at the time. Then he says this, "The association with the Highland Kingdom, as well as the time of the change, that is around 1000 BC, are the main discoveries. And if someone thinks that there was no King David, that person that doesn't think that should come up with a different name for the Highland King in whose time the region was incorporated into the Highland Kingdom." And so he's basically saying there that if you don't believe there's a King David, well, you're going to have to come up with another figure from history that lived where King David is meant to have lived and that had a kingdom, like the Bible says King David had a kingdom. because we find proof of a government that occupies this region of the Highlands all the way down to Hebron, just as the Bible says it does, under King David's time. And what proof do we have? Well, we have this massive house. We have this massive four-room house that we can date conclusively from the makeup underneath the lowest floor, from carbon samples as well as pottery. And these days, since the pottery is debated, or has been debated, what is iron 2A pottery, then they mainly are going to use the carbon dates. And the carbon samples, I think three or four were taken. I was just looking at the actual report from Mr. Faust. And I think they took three. One dates from like 930 or something like that. The rest are around 1,000. And so we're right here during the time of King David. This structure was built. And it follows Israelite, Judean architecture. And so it indicates that the Bible was likely right. There was a unified kingdom under David here in the southern, in Judah, and it extended all the way to Hebron, as the Bible says it does. And so this is obviously something that's going to be debated a lot. People are going to at first debate the dating of the structure itself, and they'll say, well, you can't really use that for dating the structure. But I tend to go along with the archaeologist that was there, generally because if they've forged anything or they're faking something, that will not hold up. Their whole academic career is on the line with this. And there's the proof. I mean, you can see the carbon samples where they were taken, the pictures inside this building or below the first floor to this building. And so we have a building associated to King David's time, very much in the south of Judea. And this is a first, or a second, I should say, after Kirbet Kaiapha. I just want to continue another couple of quotes here from this article. And again, I'll leave a link to this article in the program notes for you to read. It's from Breaking Israel News. New archaeological find confirms sophisticated Davidic kingdom. It says here, the archaeological site covers 15 acres, making it the third largest in the Judean region behind Jerusalem and Lachish. When Professor Fast's group first began excavations, they discovered fortifications suggesting the regional importance of the site. Most of the buildings at the dig were from the 8th century BCE, several hundred years later than the period of King David. But further studies suggested the site had a much more ancient history. And then it says this, the building was nicely executed, including ashlar stones in the corners and the openings. This is talking about this large four-room house. Hundreds of artifacts were unearthed within the debris, including a wide range of pottery vessels, loom weights, metal objects, botanical remains, as well as many arrowheads, evidence of the battle which accompanied the conquest of the site by the Assyrians. So he's saying that this site or this house was kind of looks like it was destroyed during the Assyrian conquering under Sennacherib around 700 BC. But it was from much earlier, much earlier. And this speaks to something that is being largely missed, I think, by the reporting on this subject. And I want to quote directly from Avraham Fass and Yair Sapir's I think this is the actual study that they've conducted. It's about 20 pages here with all the footnotes. It's entitled The Governor's Residency at Tel Eton, the United Monarchy, or Tel Eton and the United Monarchy and the Impact of the Old House Effect on Large-Scale Archaeological Reconstructions. Huge title there. It was in Radiocarbon back in early 2018, earlier this year. This is the abstract here, and it gives you some indication of not just why this site's important, but it speaks to why we haven't found much from King David's time and King Solomon's time. It speaks to why that is the case. And it gives a very good reason. The abstract says this. The governor's residency, this is this big four-room house, at Tel Eton was destroyed in the late 8th century BCE in an Assyrian military campaign. While the numerous finds enable a detailed reconstruction of life on the eve of the destruction, that is in the 8th century, this elite house was cleaned continuously, and since no floor raisings were identified, little was known of the building's period of use. So a lot of the time when you have a building like this, and we have this all the time in Jerusalem, you have a large structure that was used continuously over a couple hundred years. And you'll have somebody that comes along after the initial construction and they build a new floor. So they raise the floor layer a little bit. And then you can get a nice date because you've got the stuff that is found underneath that new floor and before the previous floor. And so your window of use it shrinks. So you can give it a smaller window, which allows you to know how long it was used and when it was constructed, or gives you a better idea of that, the more floor layers you have here associated with the building. Well, this one didn't have a floor raising. It only had one floor. And so on the destruction of that floor, or on that floor as it was destroyed, you have 8th century material culture, 8th century pottery. This is not the time of David and Solomon. This is the time of Sennacherib, time of Hezekiah. That's what they find in the destruction here. But he's saying that this house was continuously cleaned and had no new floor for hundreds of years, perhaps 200 to 300 years. Back to the time of King David. Then he writes this. This is still the abstract. Radiocarbon or carbon-14 samples taken from within a foundation deposit and from the floor makeup, however, indicate that the earliest phase of the residency was built in the late 11th, 10th century BCE. This has bearings on the date in which social complexity evolved in Judah on the debate regarding the historicity of the kingdom of David and Solomon, and it also provides the earliest date for the use of ashlar stones in Judah. And so he's saying that, well, we can actually date, even though the last use of it finished in the 8th century, we can date it to David's time. And you look at the stones that they were using, they use large ashlar stones, cut stones, hewn stones. And normally they say, well, the ashlars weren't used till, you know, late Iron 2A at the earliest, not the beginning, not David and Solomon. We don't find that anywhere. Well, he's saying, well, we actually find it in this house. Then he says this, and this is the point that I think people need to take away, especially if you've been following archaeology in this debate over King David and Solomon, the material remains that have been discovered and haven't been discovered. He says this, finally, the long life of the governor's residency exemplifies a little addressed phenomenon, the old house effect, in which buildings and settlements existed for a few centuries, but only left significant remains from their last phase. The earlier phases are hardly represented in the finds, barely studied, and rarely even published. We suggest that the old house effect influences archaeological interpretations worldwide and is also responsible for the recent attempts to down-date social complexity in Judah. Okay, what's he saying there? He's saying that the fact that we have this phenomenon where houses are built and then used for a long time and we only find them with a wealth of material from the destruction of that house, we tend to think about, well, this obviously indicates that the Judah and anywhere else in the world was most complex around that time of the destruction, because we have all the implements from the destruction right there. The wealth of material dates from the destruction layer. He's saying that the only reason we have that is because it was there when it was destroyed. What about all the other material that we can tell, we know, from the dating of this house that would have been there, but it was removed? As you do, you break something, you remove it. You break something, you remove it. I'm not going to have, even though if I occupied a house that my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather had, I'm not going to be still using the same technology he used. I'm going to bring in my own stuff, and I'm going to put my own stuff in that house, even though it's an ancient house. And this happened all through Judah. This happened all through Judah. And he says that this is a little addressed phenomenon. And it could be the reason why we don't find so much from David and Solomon's time as far as material culture goes. Because other people lived in these places after them. Yes, they might have been built by King David and Solomon, but not much of their stuff is going to remain. He talks about this further on in this piece. And if you want to read the whole radiocarbon article here, you can go ahead and do that. I'll leave a link for that as well. He writes this: "The implication of our findings for the study of the United Monarchy are clear. Thus, while the lack of evidence can and should be used as evidence, this should be done carefully. The main qualifying factor is whether we should have found the evidence. In the present context, we claim that since there was no regional-scale destruction events in Judah before the 8th century, only little is to be expected. Is expected to be found of these earlier contexts. Hence, the fact that only little is found in the 9th century context cannot be used to claim that there was no central polity at this time, because we don't have, in history, a 9th century destruction of Judah. You read the Bible and it doesn't exist, and so we don't expect to find massive destruction layers of that of their material remains. But that can't be used as evidence to say that there was no 9th century material remains. We just don't see much of them. Because, again, they weren't destroyed. There was no big destruction during those periods." Then he continues with this: "Buildings and strata can exist for a few centuries until they are destroyed, but almost all the finds will reflect the latter event. We suggest, therefore, that Building 101, this is his forum house, despite the differences between it and other buildings, is representative of a much more widespread phenomenon, that is, the old house effect, which should warn us against using the rarity of well-dated iron 2A finds as evidence for the late development of the social complexity in Judah." Again, he's saying, just because we don't find that much evidence of it doesn't mean that it didn't exist. It probably did exist, but there's just no destruction related to it, and so there's not going to be much of that evidence left for us to dig up. So this is just a really important study. It shows the reason for the lack of evidence of the period of David and Solomon, because it was largely peaceful, and even the kings after him, it was largely peaceful. It's only when we get to the times of the massive destructions, be it by the Assyrians or be it by the Babylonians, that we have a wealth of material culture remaining in these structures. But this structure, it was built during the time of King David. Somebody built it. Somebody built it who copied a style that is existent only where the Israelites and Jews were. And so, who was it? The Bible says that David lived at that time and that his kingdom extended all the way to this area. Could it not be a structure built under King David's reign? Well, certainly that's what the archaeologist there, Avraham Faust, believes. That's all we have time for today. Thank you very much for listening in. I had a whole nother segment I was going to get into, but we won't do that. We might save that for next week. If you'd like to send some feedback on the program, you can do that by writing to our email address, letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Again, if you're in Israel and you want to attend this free event at the King David, it's not too many of those, you can go ahead and send your request to that same email address, and I'll show you how you can come to the reception. Thanks again for listening. You've been listening to Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive.